All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, October 7th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Hey, buddy. And we are going to talk all about every game on the slate this week as we break each one down. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and we're here to help you either get started or continue winning on FanDuel and DraftKings. Head on over to the site, take a look at all the free content we have going up each day for basically every single DFS sport, and also grab a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, NBA, which is coming very, very soon. So very excited. That all falls under one membership umbrella, so you're just paying the $29.95 a month after that for every sport that we cover in our projection system, and you are all set to go. All right.
Yeah, baby.
I always like when you weigh in with the yeah babies on the membership plug, so
yeah,
that's good.
Let's do it. Go sign up for a membership to DFSR.com. That site's the best.
That's all, dude, so natural. So last night, before we get into the games for this Sunday, last night the Cardinals take on the 49ers. David Johnson was a 40% start in cash games on FanDuel. Not something that we were on that is going to probably come back to bite the Thursday lineups, I would say. Or it would take a Herculean effort at this point. Now, it was one of those weird crisis, well, maybe not conscious, but crisis of just sort of strategy. With Palmer out, we had a discussion about what to do with Johnson, because with Drew Stanton, it's one of those things like Drew Stanton's the quarterback, but and clearly they're going to have to go more to Johnson. But the problem is Drew Stanton's the quarterback, so how much better could the team possibly be? So
I think Stanton also, you know, Johnson relies a decent amount of his value out of the passing game. So the question is, you know, is Stanton capable of getting him the ball in the same way Palmer is too? Like, I think there's a lot going on there.
Right. So and from the bad quarterback standpoint, Stanton was bad. He was 11 for 28. The Cardinals got gifted a fumble recovery near the end zone, which definitely helped Johnson. But overall, he was great. I mean, like, he looked great. He averaged 6 yards a carry when 49ers basically knew he was going to run the ball. So they were just totally dusted from the beginning. That's going to be a hard one to overcome in the Thursday game. I'm not sure we learned too much else except that Blaine Gabbert might not be the San Francisco quarterback for too much longer now that the calls for Kaepernick are coming out there. But we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure that sways anything in the DFS world going forward, except the 49ers replace one bad quarterback with another bad quarterback. So
yeah, I mean, Blaine Gabbert's kind of funny. Like, he's just kind of a poor man's Kaepernick. Like, he ran the ball 10 times last night.
Oh, they
he's
had
running the ball a ton.
Right, they had a ton of design runs for him. Like, they ran the read option with him, and
if you're going to do that, why don't you just put Kaepernick out there? Kaepernick's elite at that. That's something he's actually excellent at.
Right, so I don't know. I mean, the 49ers are lost. This is Chip Kelly this is Chip Kelly plus bad players, and so, like, now you're just in trouble town. Let's get into this week's games. We're going to start off with Tennessee goes to Miami. Miami's a slight favorite going into the game. Both teams just leave a lot to be desired from a football standpoint, I would say. Though, you know, there's some interesting possible value to grab in this game. Mariota is a guy right now, and I don't think it probably ends up being the case, but Mariota is really pretty close to the top of our DraftKings value. Not like necessarily in the lineups or not necessarily a must play, but if you look at points per dollar, Mariota shows up high. Where do you think we go with Mariota considering the DraftKings price, which is pretty cheap? It's only $5,400.
Yeah, he's obviously really affordable, and anytime you get a really cheap quarterback, you should at least do your due diligence, because in many cases, you can, you know, there's just built-in value to that. You know, it's hard for a quarterback to be worth less than, like, on FanDuel, say, $6,000, right? So that's why we talked about liking Brian Hoyer there this week. With Mariota, though, it's kind of interesting, because the real question here is, you know, with the current cast of characters that they have, and Mariota still being pretty young, you know, is he more like the guy we saw last year or even in the first 2 weeks of this season? Or has he been this guy, you know, in two reasonable matchups the last 2 weeks, who's been just completely terrible? Like, right. I mean, the 51% completion percentage against Oakland is by far the worst that anyone's been against them this season. And then he follows that up with a Drew Stanton like 13 for 29 and a pick in the following week. So, I mean, yeah, I guess I don't mind him for big tournaments. I mean, they're using DeMarco Murray out of the passing game a lot. Maybe he gets some random, you know, big, you know, catch and runs from Murray. But yeah, Sharp doesn't seem to be clicking with him very well. Delanie Walker, you know, just hasn't been quite as good as some of the big games he had last year. So I don't know. I'm not very intrigued by playing Mariota personally. I think you can probably just do better elsewhere. And that's also largely because where do you get the upside from Mariota? You know, like, you get it on a points per dollar basis, but he is extremely unlikely to be even one of the middle of the pack or, you know, top level QBs for this week. So I'm personally not on board.
No, I think that's correct. I mean, we have some pretty healthy multipliers in there for the Miami defense right now. That's really the thing that's helping his case, yeah. Right? Like that Miami's allowing a decent amount of plays per game, and they have some just overall defensive issues just throughout the passing games, and mostly in the passing game. So
except for Oakland has allowed the most passing yards in the season, and he was horrible against them. So
believe me, it's not a case for Mariota. it's mostly a case against the Dolphins defense. I'm just trying to explain why. Like when you bottom
feeding, that makes sense. I guess maybe I'm overstating a little bit given how bad the Dolphins have been. Maybe Mariota is better, but I suspect the Titans go in the other direction when they're actually in a close game. I think they lean on the guy who's been so successful in Murray. So. That's where my gut tells me.
On the Miami side of the ball, Tennessee is just kind of a team. I don't know what we can make of them. They just kind of fall in the middle of the pack just in just about everything. Mm-hmm. Like there's like an average, well, they're below average on offense, but defense kind of average against the run, kind of average against the pass. They kind of play slow. Is there anything that we want to get behind on the Dolphins side of the ball? And there has been a note that they are going to maybe go a little bit away from the running back by committee that they had been trying to employ to diminishing returns up until this point.
I mean, diminishing.
Sorry.
Is it slash no returns?
Completely diminished. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the major guy you're looking at on the Dolphins side of the ball from week to week is Jarvis Landry. Still a top five targets guy in the season. He's done pretty well with those targets. He's gotten run a little bit below expectation in terms of touchdowns. Although, again, since the Dolphins are just so bad on offense, it's hard for them to score any touchdowns. But yeah, top five targets guy overall, 20% of the team targets. If the Dolphins do put it together in a given week, we've seen that, you know, he can kind of go off, you know, 7 for 120 in a touch against Cleveland, 10 for 135 yards against New England in a fairly tough matchup there. So, you know, I guess it kind of depends on the game script here. Like if the Dolphins are actually leading, maybe he loses a little bit of that share because they're used to just being behind and kind of just getting their butts kicked. But I do think that he's really the only guy you can consider. And for me, he's not a super strong consideration, given that we just have a ton of other value at that price range.
Yeah, this just strikes me as just kind of a game I really won't watch, a game that I don't really care too much about. I mean, someone could emerge from it. We'll take a little closer look at Mariota's just points per dollar value on DraftKings where we have him now. I suspect it probably comes down a little bit from the adjustments we've already made, but for the most part, this is just kind of a game I can just kind of skip and not even put
yeah, on. I think that's fine.
The next game is a game we talked about a decent amount on the last podcast or yesterday's podcast. With the Patriots and the Browns, they're huge favorites. Tom Brady is back. They're -10.5 going in. We don't probably need to spend too much time on Brady. We did a pretty deep dive on him going in. The same with Edelman and a little bit on Blunt. Was there anything else you wanted to consider?
Say we really recommended, if you didn't catch that podcast, we recommended Brady, recommended Edelman for all formats. And then Blunt, I think we were kind of lukewarm on. I don't recall what we said yesterday, but that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, the Blunt thing was just kind of, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see him get 20 carries. It wouldn't be surprising to see him get, you know, 9. So it's just kind of, he's just probably too risky considering you don't know what the Patriots are going to do with now that their team is just completely different with a brand new quarterback. On the Browns side of the ball, we mentioned Terrell Pryor as possibly a guy. If the Browns are playing catch up, the targets were still there for them. They did throw to him in the red zone, and then there was the Isaiah Crowell thing where it's just really, really difficult to start a running. I know he's been very good this year. It's very difficult to start a running back that is a huge, huge dog. Those guys just don't typically translate to elite level or even really safe level fantasy performances. So I think the Browns side of the ball is pretty much a stay away.
And I think Crowell too. Like I think a lot of people are going to be very enthusiastic about him just because he's one of the rushing leaders in the NFL. But the opportunity really hasn't been very strong. And yeah, he does great on a yards per carry basis because, again, the team's always behind and the other team doesn't mind him chewing up 5 yards of carry or whatever. But yeah, he's not going to be a 6-plus yards per carry guy for the rest of the season.
No, and he's broken off, I think, at least one, but possibly two really long runs in that time.
Yeah, I don't consider him a huge upside guy, even though he has been, really.
Sure, and you can be good. To break off an 80-yard run, you need to be good. So don't get me wrong. Like, bad running backs just won't do that. That being said, early in the season, a run like that will make it look like your yards per carry is elite, and you just might not be. So anyway, moving on to the next game is the Texans headed to Minnesota. Minnesota is – well, I'm not even sure I want to call them a surprise. I mean, when Teddy Bridgewater went down, you know, well, before the Sam Bradford trade – there was kind of a season's over kind of thing. And it was a shame because we knew their defense was going to be good, and they had Peterson, and all of a sudden their season was kind of in doubt. They bring in Bradford. Bradford has been I wish we could go back and just replay what we talked about Bradford going into the season, because we were pretty high on him in earlier podcasts, just on how his sort of the rhetoric against him was so maligned and not really maybe correctly. Like, he was still an accurate passer and had just sort of run bad with interceptions. The narrative on him has, 100% flipped at this point. Like, people are like, oh, I can't believe we overlooked Bradford. Oh, my God, Sam Bradford. He's been just the same guy and just has a good defense now. And
which is to say a game manager, but a really good one. Right. And, if you're going to have a 70% completion percentage, it's just hard to be awful. Like, this is a recipe we've seen, like Russell Wilson, for instance. Russell Wilson's kind of like Sam Bradford who can run. And that's a big plus, right? I mean, it's makes him much better, but he doesn't bomb the ball downfield all the time. Like, you can be very successful just throwing those short routes effectively.
And so that's where, and those short routes and the short game for them is where our system is kind of sniffing out the value. It likes Jerick McKinnon, especially DraftKings, likes Kyle Rudolph a lot, assuming he plays. I know he sat out yesterday, but I think that there's not so much reason to be concerned there. So are those guys cash considerations for you? I know we talked a lot about McKinnon on the podcast yesterday, about Rudolph on the podcast yesterday, as probably the cash game play. If he plays, he'll probably be the highest owned player, I think, but at the tight end. But what about McKinnon?
Yeah, I mean, McKinnon's kind of interesting. I mean, first of all, yes, he's a cash game play on DraftKings for sure at 4,000. That's just the price of backups normally. And with back-to-back weeks, 21 touches last week, 17 the week before that, with the Vikings having, a lot of desire to play this kind of ball control style in Houston's offense, looking kind of underwater at times this season, I think that he'll continue to get those touches. The only issue with McKinnon, and this is just poking holes because, again, at his price, he's still more than worth it, is he's just not the goal line back. So once they get inside the 5-yard line, they just give it to Asiata, even though Asiata is just simply not very good. Like, I mean, I guess they're like, hey, he's the heaviest guy on the team at running back, so he gets the ball. But yeah, I think that McKinnon still can more than provide value. He's just not going to give you that huge, huge upside maybe for your big tournaments. Like, I'd be pretty surprised if he was in the winning GPP lineup this weekend. But yeah, great value.
Can you consider really anyone? You mentioned sort of being just kind of plodding along the Houston offense. The Vikings defense is basically elite at this point, I would say. Outside of just really want to go contrarian in a tournament because there's a case to be made for just almost anybody at that point. Is there anything to even look at here on the Houston side?
No, I mean, the only guys we normally consider for Houston on a week-to-week basis are Lamar Miller and Will Fuller. And given the matchup and the fact, I mean, Will Fuller in particular, his price has gone up to the point where, you're just comparing him against other legit proven guys. And in a bad matchup, that's not going to fly. And Miller, he continues to get a lot of usage, but he just said now on zero touchdowns, it's a concern. And given that Minnesota's defense is so tough, I'm not going to play him either. So the long way to say no.
Yeah, no, that's a long way to say no. Moving into the Jets take on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is one of the bigger favorites on the week, -7.5. They have the second highest implied total at just a shade under 28. New England is first right now. It's funny about Pittsburgh. They're basically, in some ways, they're a very, very easy team to project for because they're just essentially a three-headed monster in Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown. So, wow. Was that like your three-headed monster growl?
Wow.
That was really, really intimidating.
Scared.
Yeah. Very scared. Scared for that people just are going to shut the podcast off is mostly what I'm scared about.
Send me slurs in the mail. Yeah, no thanks, bud.
The Jets are a team that, again, they're a little bit hard to evaluate on both sides of the ball, but where do you see Pittsburgh, could you run a scenario where you basically just play Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell and punt in other places or try to grab as much value in other places because the floor on that trio is really, really high?
Well, I think certainly the floor is high on Bell and Brown. I wouldn't dispute that at all. I guess I'm going to call shenanigans on Roethlisberger having a really high floor. I mean, we've seen him have an extremely high ceiling. He did this last year as well. And of course, last week, the flat 300 yards and 5 passing touchdowns. Sounds like a line out of like Friday Night Lights or something. Right. but they still have Le'Veon Bell there. And while, yes, Le'Veon Bell is going to receive a lot of his yards and he kind of synergizes with Roethlisberger in that way, he's still just not like a guy who, is just going to do a week in, week out on a top tier price tag, which is what he has now. $8,600 on FanDuel means you're essentially taking him as the flat total points leader on the week. And I just don't think he's there. I mean, Yeah, sure. Last game was great, no question about it. But going into week three, he had 6 touchdowns and 4 interceptions and 800 yards in 3 games. That's just not the kind of production you want out of your, you know, clear number one top dollar quarterback.
And so, to be clear about the Friday Night Lights reference, you're talking about a Jason Street led offense. I'm going to assume you're not talking about a Matt Saracen led offense, because Saracen was definitely not a 5 touchdown a game.
Yeah, it was more like dump it to Smash Williams. But I mean,
it was kind of like get steamrolled for like the first 3 quarters and then come back in heroic fashion, so this episode ended on like on a nice note. That was usually his kind of game plan.
Yeah, that's a good call. But no, when Vince took over the offense, so later in the season.
Still more of a running quarterback.
He was running for a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I just didn't want people to call foul on your Friday Night Lights reference there, because I was concerned about that. Now, to be clear, okay, with our system, Roethlisberger, we have him as the 6th overall highest quarterback. So he's not a guy that we were probably considering cash games. I just wanted to throw it out there as an idea that I think some people have.
Yeah, you're seeing his name pop up across the industry right now. Bell, I think it's fine. You know, I don't think Roethlisberger is bad or anything, but
no.
I just think that I just don't see why you would pay. Like, if you're going to pay up at that position, he's not the guy I would choose. I would go, you know, I would go with Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady is the same price. His team is projected to score more points, and they've historically relied on the pass even more. So I don't know why choose Roethlisberger over the guy who...
I do think, though, that going cheap at quarterback and playing Bell and Brown together is totally viable, possibly even correct.
That's a good call. Well, and also playing Roethlisberger just probably prevents you from playing either Bell or Brown, or it forces you to just punt everywhere. So, and I don't think it's a week for that personally. So, yeah, I'm off that personal stuff.
So take him out of the equation, but Bell and Brown, if you roll them together in cash games, I think you're giving yourself just a lot of implied points. On the Jets side, I think we talked about Brandon Marshall yesterday as sort of being an elite target guy, especially if Decker is out. I know there's some question about whether he's going to play. I doubt he does. Like, he was looking pretty bad for him. I don't suspect he's back this week. And we talked about how Marshall is just, I don't know, close to an elite target guy, especially if Decker's not there. He gets the red zone looks. He's a guy that I would be fine throwing out in cash games, especially if the Jets are playing from behind. What about Forte in terms of his usage in this game? They'll play him every down. Presumably, though, Bilal Powell has cut into some of his stuff recently. How do you look at Forte here?
I'm pretty much off Forte, I think. You know, the talk after his 1 week where he had the 30 carries and 2 receptions, I think it was, against Buffalo, was that, we don't care. We're just going to give him the ball. If he's going to be this great, we'll just keep giving him the ball every game.
And then the general manager called down to the hey,
can't do that. So, I mean, and it's 2 tough matchups in a row with Kansas City and Seattle. So maybe you don't want to make too much out of that. But, you know, to go from a guy who was in the high 20s, low 30s touches to 17 and 16, and also the rise of Bilal Powell, who a lot of people going into the season thought would be more of in a timeshare with Forte, Forte is fairly cheap, so you're not really having to pay up that much. But in a game where they ought to be trailing as well, like you used to be able to count on Forte getting all those receptions out of the backfield to make up the difference. And if you're not going to be able to do that, and the Jets are happy just passing when they're down, I just don't think it's going to be really hard for him to return enough value to where you're going to feel happy playing him as opposed to your other options in the same price range. So no, I'm not going to play Forte. I do think we missed one guy on the Steelers side, and that's Sammy Coates. He's very cheap on FanDuel. He's just 5,300. And he did have, even with Bell and Brown there last week, he managed to get a 24% target share. So he also didn't even play every snap. So it's hard to say exactly what their plan is for him. But it does look like they're going to at least be considering him very heavily, and could be a very, very strong upside play. And maybe even a cash game play if people, if you really just need to save up somewhere.
And the other guy on the Jets side was Quincy Enunwa, who's seen some targets. So there's a fair amount of value to be had from this game on both sides of the ball, especially with the way the potential game script could go when you look at the Vegas total going into the game. So this is one that I think I'll have more than a few pieces from going in. To the next one, we have the Redskins going into Baltimore. The Baltimore has started at -3.5 up to -4, though the over-under came down a little bit, mostly off of the Redskins side of the ball, though a little off of Baltimore. What do you like from this game with the idea, too, that Harbaugh came out and said that Terrence West, after a pretty big carry game last week, said he's not sure. The Ravens are such a mess. Now it's like, now he might not get the carries. What do we do with the Ravens here?
Yeah, I mean, I think West is still an interesting play for big tournaments. I mean, I don't think I was going to play him regardless because he's just not the third down back. Like, they're passing to Javorius Allen when they want to have a pass-catching back out there. So, you know, West, to me, is not super interesting. Frankly, none of the Ravens are really interesting. Pitt's targets have trailed off. They're not really – no one's really exciting me at the wide receiver position. Like, I guess I like Steve Smith. You know, he's definitely – seems to be sort of in the ageless wonder category. Mm-hmm. He's definitely getting a lot of targets, but – they're not really a pass-heavy offense. I mean, I still obviously 6,300 on FanDuel for a team's target leader is very strong. But yeah, I'm not jumping over backwards to try to jam him in or anything. Yeah, I'm just kind of unexciting all around.
Yeah, they want to get Kenneth Dixon in the mix maybe a little bit. It's just the Ravens are a mess. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, like they're just very very difficult to figure out what's going on there, and the news and stuff coming out of that place doesn't help either. What about the Redskins side of the ball?
Well, I think I looked at Matt Jones actually going into this week because he's a guy, you know, a lot of people were kind of high on going into the season for season-long leagues. And last week against Cleveland, he did go out and have his highest touch and point total game of the year. So he had 22 carries, two receptions, and 117 rushing yards. That's great. You know, that's more than enough production on his price point. But I just don't know that you're going to be able to rely on it. And he's still competitively priced at 6,900. Baltimore's been pretty solid against the run, so I don't think, and I mean, the Vegas total doesn't suggest that this is a game where you want to play him either, but just kind of put him out there on your radar for mostly big tournament plays.
Yeah, Baltimore ranks first against the rush in DVOA this year. They play at a slow pace just because they will run the ball, the short passing game. It's kind of just an avoid for me on Matt Jones, who I just don't think is very that good either. So, yeah, we have him for a decent amount of touches and not that many points. And that, to me, is as long as we figure the inputs on our system are correct, that is points me as like a red flag stay away. Yeah. Moving to a game that I find more interesting than the previous one is the Bears and the Colts. Colts are still kind of a mess, especially on the offensive line, though they're favored here against the Bears, who are also kind of a mess because of injuries this year. We talked about Hoyer and Jordan Howard in depth yesterday, as both we see them as cash game value plays, even as underdogs in this game, for just kind of reasons that we went into detail on yesterday that I'm not going to rehash, but those guys are definitely in play. On the Colts side of the ball, they're heavy favorites here. Our system was pretty high on Luck to start the week, though I lowered some of his expectation just based on some of the issues that the Colts are having, mostly just protecting him. they lead
sure,
the
well, he's still got this lingering shoulder thing that limits him in practice, and they continue to insist it's no big deal, but he's just like not been that great. So yeah, I think it's very reasonable to lower his expectation.
Well, it's funny because the completion percentage is sort of there. He's throwing in volume. He's throwing around 65%. The yards really, they kind of come and go because, you know, 234 one game, then 300, then less than 200, then almost 400. So he's just like hard to totally trust. He'll get out and scramble a little bit. But again, the Colts offensive line is, I can't really understand, there's really, really bad. And he has no time. He's just going to get hurt again, is what it seems like is going to happen. But I think you can maybe consider him just because they have a high team total and his price has come down just a tick. Other guys to consider, I mean, what do you think about like guys like T.Y. Hilton, Frank Gore, considering that the Colts do have a pretty high implied total this week?
Yeah, I think they're a really interesting big tournament package. Luck and Hilton in particular, we've seen them connect to win GPPs for people in the past, so I don't think you want to sleep on them completely. But Hilton right now, I mean, you're going to pay $7,700 for him on FanDuel. That's just a lot for a guy who essentially hauls in 50% of the balls thrown his way. So, yeah, he'll continue to be one of the target leaders in the NFL. But, you know, again, with the shoulder issue with Luck, it seems to me that he's having trouble throwing downfield and that, you know, a lot of his completions are coming up closer. I don't see why you would want to trust that instead of going in a different direction. Right. But yeah, for a big tournament, like the week that it does click is probably going to be pretty spectacular. So I don't fault anyone for thinking that it might be this week against a subpar Chicago defense. Again, cash games, no thanks.
Yeah, and it's also, again, hard to throw downfield when you just have, you know, a second and a half to 2 seconds to throw. And so,
yeah, that's a great point. Right. Those plays can't develop. Yeah.
Right, so, and there's just no real end in sight, I don't think. I mean, again, the Bears defense is nothing to write home about. Not like I write home anyway. Like, does anyone, no one write?
Nothing, dear Dad.
Nothing to email home about. But the Bears defense, like I said, like they're slightly above average against the pass in DVOA, slightly below average against the run. They're just kind of a team. I think the reason you consider the Colts here is just because – they're favorites. They're expected to put up a lot of points at home. The game should play at a decent pace. So that's the that side of the ball, though it's a little hard to sniff out the very, very specific, especially cash game value from that. And like I said, the Bears side of the ball we do think is interesting in terms of the way that a lot of those guys are priced.
Yeah, we let, and did you mention them specifically? Jordan Howard, Zach Miller.
Yeah, buddy, I mentioned them right at the beginning of this. I said we talked
about I was zoning out.
We do a lot, the TLDL. Too long, didn't listen, but yeah.
Absolutely.
The next game on tap, the very, very surprising Eagles. I was back in Philly last. I'm from my family lives in Philadelphia. I am not a Philly fan or never was, but it's very interesting to go back. Went to a party in Philadelphia. The amount of excitement coming from these guys, and I'm not usually a person that's like, oh man, the whole town's talking about it. It really was funny. Like they just cannot stop talking about how good the Eagles are. It's like. It almost feels like they're setting themselves up for massive disappointment in true Philly fashion, I hope, because what do you think about this Eagles team? Is there a way? I mean, they're clearly not going to go undefeated, but they have another good matchup here against the Lions this week. They're actually favored on the road, which I don't think anyone – we could have probably bet the farm going into the season that that would never happen for this Eagles team, and here we are. What do you think about the Eagles?
The Eagles are going to go undefeated this season? Look at their schedule going forward.
Honestly, I didn't even try to broach that subject because, I mean, right now it's
– When are they going to be underdogs? Not against Detroit, 1-3.
I don't think that's a Philly accent,
Then they go with the Redskins. Give me a break. The Redskins, they're going to beat them. That's – now we're 5-0.
Now you're kind of doing like a – It's like a sort of like mashup Mike Missinelli Francesa thing. So combining
that's the Eagles fan thing.
But the accent was wrong. Okay, let's go. Eagles team. What's the true story on the Eagles team here?
I don't know anything about my Philly accent. On the Eagles team is that they're solid. I mean, you know, they've obviously made a big transition on defense. I think on some level they have snuck up on teams, and I think like I am not personally ready to crown them because. You know, at least a couple soft games on their schedule, and then they obviously just whipped Pittsburgh. And you know, there's nothing else you can say about that. That's a quality win, as we'll call it in the industry. But yeah, I mean, beating Chicago and Cleveland, I don't know. I think they're mostly surprising teams because they just haven't been awful, which is what most people thought they would be. And I'm not personally ready to. Just celebrate them because they haven't been awful.
Well, the ass kicking of Pittsburgh is really what put them on the map, right? Because that is that, like you said, the total quality win. They put up a ton of points. Pittsburgh, who has an elite offense, maybe one of the best in the league, could not do anything. It's hard to know exactly what to do with the Eagles on the offensive side of the ball. Smallwood had a great game against Pittsburgh, but they come out and say that Matthews is still going to be the starting running back, so you're kind of left in a state of flux there. I'm not sure you can play Jordan Matthews here. There's some questions with the tight end game. So, I don't know. On the offensive side, I'm just sort of left thinking, let other people play these guys, not for me. And then on the Detroit side, if you want to believe that the Eagles defense is like an elite defense, they rank first against the pass this year in DVOA. Again, you mentioned that some of their matchups leave a lot to be desired. Is there anything you can get excited for on the Detroit side of the ball at all, or even any one that I possibly missed on the Eagles side?
Well, no, I think that on the Detroit side of the ball, we've seen a couple of people go in and out of favor in terms of their public perception. You know, the running backs, people wanted to sniff out sleepers there. It's never materialized. Marvin Jones, you know, going to pat ourselves on the back here a little bit, my friend, because after a couple of really big games, comes crashing back down to earth, as predicted last week, 5 receptions for just 74 yards against Chicago. And I think the more troubling thing there is Jones's target percentage has gone down every single week this season. So from 16, 15, 12, and then just 11 against Chicago in what ought to have been a pretty good matchup. So given that the Eagles handled Antonio Brown, I don't know why you're going to stick your neck out on Marvin Jones.
Yeah, this one just, again, falls into the no man's land DFS category. There might be some guys that emerge on the high upside plays just because, I don't know, that happens in every game. But for the most part, heading into especially cash games, I'm just mostly avoiding it. I do see some people wanting to possibly play the Eagles defense here. That's another – it's hard. I don't know. I don't have the total numbers to back this up. But playing a team on the road just in a dome doesn't strike me as a great place to spend for defense. And I should have actually mentioned before that we really like the Vikings defense and the Patriots defense this week in terms of just like cash game defensive plays. And I think the Vikings end up being the chalk there. Heading over to the Falcons and the Broncos, some question here about whether Trevor Siemian is going to play. I think signs are pointing like he's going to, but that has not been confirmed whether it's going to be him or Paxton Lynch who came in and did okay-ish, you know, when he came in for Siemian last week.
Yeah, he was good.
They take on a Falcons team who just, I mean, passed all over the Panthers last week. Julio Jones putting up a transcendent game. What do you like coming out of either side of this game?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of big questions here. Sorry, I'm cracking up because we had to cut out for a sec, and then I tried to go before you said 3-2-1, and you started yelling at me like that famous Chris Berman clip where he's just one of the people at ESPN. So I'm a little rattled. My confidence is shaken, but I'm going to hop back on board right now. So I think there's a couple of very interesting wrinkles to this game. The first one for me is Emmanuel Sanders. So Sanders is a guy who, you know, has put up some huge fantasy totals in the past. And in the last 2 weeks, I mean, he's got better than a 21% target share, 8 receptions or more in both games, more than 200 total yards, and 3 receiving touchdowns. And that's just like a lot of production for a guy who has a track record and is cheap. I mean, he's 7,100 on FanDuel. So I think that, you know, it's a very, very nice matchup with Atlanta. I think you can definitely look at Sanders as the type of guy who, you know, maybe he's even cash game viable. I'm not totally sure. But yeah, he, definitely an interesting guy and absolutely a very interesting play on a points per dollar basis for big tournaments. Another guy, and on the other side of the ball, I think the wide receiver one over there is going to be, it's going to be putting people to the test in terms of how much do you trust just the most recent performance versus, you know, the kind of less than stellar track record before that this season versus really tough matchup. So I think there's a lot to think about in this game, and I'm not exactly sure where I land on it yet, to be honest.
Yeah, I really just wish, I mean, if Simeon plays, I think it helps the Sanders thing. I mean, I guess Lynch isn't so different, all things considered. Atlanta's been...
Lynch and Sanders looked fine together last week.
Right, and Atlanta's so bad against the pass this season, so they just... I think I'm with you on Sanders pushing up against that cash game play territory. The only issue for him is there just are a couple other players in sort of his grouping, like Edelman for 7,200.
You're going to take Edelman over him any day.
Brandon Marshall at 76. I think it's close between those two.
Yes, I'd rather have Sanders and Marshall there.
Yeah, I think I would. Okay, you know what? Give us a little no halftime shout out here real quick.
I will, absolutely. So no halftime is an application that you can put on your smartphone or tablet. And what it allows you to do is make one-on-one fantasy challenges with other people across the world, Doug. It doesn't matter where in the world they are, as long as they have a tablet or smartphone. Yeah, people know what that means. So you can put your challenge out, and it's a one-on-one fantasy contest where you only draft one player. So you choose a player. So you choose Emmanuel Sanders, say. Then you can choose a guy who you think he'll be better than. I don't probably personally recommend choosing Brandon Marshall because you can probably just get better value elsewhere. But you put your challenge out into the world, and then you let people decide if they want to take it or not. You can put it for basically any amount of money, and then if you know you win, you get the money, and if not, you lose. Very straightforward. You can also troll around and look for all the other challenges people have put out. People have put out all sorts of great value challenges on your half, so you can use the RDFSR projection system, play no halftime, and I think you'll be very successful. I know a lot of our users have done very well on no halftime. So that's nohalftime.com. Download the app, use promo code DFSR25, and you can get 100% bonus up to $25.
So
that is my no halftime pitch. And my no halftime challenge to you, Doug, is Emmanuel Sanders versus Brandon Marshall.
Yeah, I'll take the Brandon Marshall side. I'm not like totally in love with it. It's probably not one I would accept on no halftime because I think it's close enough. Like, but I think it's, you know, in terms of just where we have them, just in terms of price and overall production, I just tend to trust our system. So, and we have Marshall for slightly higher than Sanders, though, like I said, it's fairly close.
Well, hold on. And so one thing is real quick. We make the system together and we both agree on the inputs. So implicitly it should be understood. Like actually someone sent me an email and they were like, why do you always go against the system in the no halftime challenges? Well, the answer is because Doug is no fun. He's never going to pick the guy who's not against the system. So that has to be my role. Otherwise, we'll just agree on everything and we won't have any no halftime challenges. And then no halftime won't want to be on the podcast anymore. And then that won't be good. So that's why, okay?
Did you really get an email about that?
I did, actually, yeah.
That's pretty hilarious. I was wondering if that would happen because, yeah, you just kind of spent a lot of time just convincing people to go elsewhere for their fantasy advice. Let's go into the next game, which is the Bengals.
Nothing else from that Denver Atlanta game, CJ Anderson and any of those other guys?
CJ Anderson's interesting to me. Like, if you think that he's going to get sort of like lion's share of the carries, especially if, I mean, I don't know if it, but the thing is, I'm not actually sure how much it shifts.
Semien in one hand, Lynch in the other.
That's what I mean. They're kind of the same. Like, I think they look the same. They kind of play the same. It was hard for me when I was watching the game.
How dare you? They look the same?
That when
you got to take that out, dude.
When I was watching the game last week, I was like, hard to tell kind of who was playing. Whatever. They're just kind of, but still, I mean, Anderson still had 19 carries last week. The rushing average really wasn't there. It's actually been down It's dropped every week since the first one. So yards per game was 4.6, 3.7, and then 2 weeks of 2.6 and 2.6. That's a little concerning to me just in terms of them getting something going on the ground. Falcons, again, they're not a very good defense. So if you're going to tick back up your just like anything really against the team, this is a good team to do it against. It's not something I would do in cash games. There's too much uncertainty on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I could see him being a, especially if they get the lead, he's an interesting tournament play, especially as a pivot away from some of the other guys in his price range.
Yeah, I think it's strong. Again, I think you're probably right that there's just too much value at the position. But yeah, he'll get some run for sure.
The next game is the Bengals going to Dallas. This game is, well, Bengals by, it's kind of swapped around. It started at Dallas minus one. It's flipped over to Bengals minus one. I'd probably just end up calling it a pick 'em. They have both right around the 23 implied points range. Bengals,
which to say that's bad if you don't have context on that. That's, you know, the Steelers have 27. You know,
right. 20% less. 20% less about than, or, yeah, you know, 15 to 20% less than some of the other teams that we've been a lot more bullish on. So on this, and this makes sense too. These teams play pretty slow altogether, especially Dallas. They find the control of the ball. And when you just play the, when you play this kind of slow game, it just kills your expectation on the volume side of the ball, which obviously you need to hit sort of big upside or even just hit your floor. AJ Green coming off a big game. You know, Des Bryant's kind of not looking like he's going to play again. What, if anything, can you get excited about at all in this game?
Well, I think this is actually a good game to take a few good DFS lessons from, because I think a lot of people, I mean, DFS is hard, right? And this is why, last football season, you know, it's, I don't know if this is a secret or not, but industry wide, fewer people are playing. I actually saw a report that NFL viewership was down this year, which is kind of crazy, but DFS is definitely down from a football perspective this season. And that's because DFS is hard. There are so many factors to consider. You know, matchups are so different from week to week. I mean, it's crazy how different they are. And they're also very hard to evaluate, you know, given that teams only play, like if this was the fourth day of the NBA season or the fifth day of the NBA season, no one would be making any big proclamations about the new breakout teams. Like imagine a team, like the Eagles have played three games. Like imagine if you had played three NBA games, the ridiculous things you could say after that many games. And so, yeah, this is tough. But I think one thing that Vegas is quite good at understanding, and I think our system interprets very well too, are these things that are that normalize pretty quickly, right? And I think pace and general game plan are two of them. And so since these teams both play pretty slowly, that's going to mean that teams that face them are rarely of value. And then when they wind up facing each other, that just means that it's hard to find value anywhere. And that's kind of what's going on here because, you know, since they play pretty slowly, pretty methodically, they tend to do the same thing, which is run the ball. And so guys like Ezekiel Elliott, and obviously the committee in Cincinnati, which you just normally can't consider, but, you know, these guys are kind of priced appropriately. So you know what they're getting, and then you're going to play them in a good matchup. And this isn't a very good matchup. So right. I don't think there's a whole lot else to say besides that. I mean, I like AJ Green here. I do think Dallas's pass defense is kind of overrated. I guess Cole Beasley is a guy you could consider just in terms of, you know, he has had some huge target games he could go off. But yeah, overall, I'm just not really looking at this game to fill my lineups this week.
And also just for context, when we're talking about pace, the Dallas and Cincinnati rank 6th and 8th in terms of least amount of opponents plays per game that they're allowing. So so just both of them are top 10 teams when it comes to just really just slowing the game down. It's again, I can't really just can't overstate how important of a factor that is when you're trying to consider about who to play in DFS. Moving into the next game, which has many more fantasy implications than the previous one, is the Chargers and the Raiders. Raiders are, I would put them into that surprise team grouping this year. They're 3-1 to start. They have had a lot of success, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The one guy who's really emerged, especially in the passing game, I should rephrase. He hasn't really emerged. He's emerged in the sense that now they're throwing to him in the end zone a lot, Michael Crabtree. He leads the team in targets. He also leads the team in touchdown catches. This was something that is somewhat of a shift from last year when they just used him mostly in short possession, and that was kind of it. The other piece of news coming out of here that you can maybe want to comment on is Latavius Murray's kind of looking doubtful and what that would do to the running game if he were to not play. What do you like about Oakland side first?
Well, the Crabtree-Cooper dynamic has been an interesting one to observe this season because, on FanDuel right now, Crabtree is still cheaper than Cooper in spite of the fact that he's out-targeted him, out-received him, and been the primary red zone target. So I don't really know what's going on there. I guess my suggestion would be if you're going to pick one, pick the guy who's been better and is cheaper. I don't know if that's going too far out on a limb for anyone, but But that's my sense there. I'm actually not totally sure what to make of the running back situation. I mean, do you have a gut feeling there?
Well, it's weird. They were basically sharing the ball anyway, right? I mean, outside of the first couple games, outside of the first game, Murray has seen his target, his rushes just decrease over, and they weren't really high on him to start the season. There was always a question, even when the season first started, whether he was just right. going to be the guy for the whole season. There was speculation that he wouldn't be. He really hasn't been. I mean, he only 8 carries last game. The thing is that they haven't really run the ball that much, just in general.
Well, right, and DeAndre Washington is so cheap, but right, if they're not going to run the ball, what are you doing there?
Like, I'm wondering, like, what, I'm kind of wondering what amount of carries we would need to sort of guarantee DeAndre Washington has to make him worth it, because right now, you can't, like, pencil him. So it's right, so you look at last game, and you figure there's no Murray there. You're only taking away 8 total carries. So, and then splitting those 8 carries between Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington. And even if you did it, like, I don't know, the 75% split, which might not even be correct. So now you're giving him 6 more carries than he had before, which that takes him up to 11 or 12, right? And so with a little bit more, maybe more in the passing game, though Murray's not totally targeted there. I just don't know. This is one of those cases where I could see people talking themselves into Washington, and they could just change their dynamic and just start running the ball, and he could get 15 touches. And if that was the case, he would be a fantastic value, all things considered. But it's really, really tough to know. That makes sense. Like, it's tough to know, and it's tough to just hand him a bunch. It's like, not a Jordan Howard situation where you take Jeremy Langford's 22 touches and just give them to Jordan Howard, right? Like, that's not what's happening here. It wasn't happening already, and now it's not like things have totally crystallized.
And I think, okay, so I think that we're going to just need to wait and see what they say, because one thing that you're missing in Murray is that he is the definitive goal line back right now.
Right.
And so losing the goal line back is always, I mean, and I don't think that they view DeAndre Washington that way. I mean, Murray is just simply, he's a massive Hulk compared to either Richard or Washington. So Murray, 6'3", 230. The other guys are, I was trying to look at this to try to figure out who would get the goal line carries.
Right.
They're both exactly 5'8", and they're within 3 pounds of one another, right around 200 pounds. So who knows what their plan is there. I think if you did get a sense that one guy was going to be the feature back, I mean, they're both so cheap that you really have to consider them, and given that Washington has the higher draft pedigree, I think, or at least like the greater buzz, you know, I mean, he was a 5th-round pick, Richard was undrafted, so it's not like either is a headlining star or anything like that. But I think DeAndre Washington, even in a split load, this is again the tough thing about DFS, like you would never play either of these guys in your season-long league, but at 4,700, he doesn't need to do much for you to have really, really gotten away with something. So definitely should be on your radar, but I don't have a great answer for anyone right now.
If there was news that came out, like if we could get Murray definitively out, and I don't think he has not practiced yet. So we at the start was just getting Murray out. Then once Murray is out, if they come out and say, oh no, we're just going to give DeAndre Washington the ball, you know, for 75% of the snaps or something, then I would really start considering, because like you said, 4,700 is about as cheap as you'll ever get any running back. And it only happens when you get midweek news about a running back situation.
Yeah. So, and this is where you can really make hay in daily fantasy too, is you go super cheap on him, and then maybe all of a sudden you can afford to go, you know, like if you start your lineups with Brady, Washington, Bell, Brown, and Edelman, you're feeling great, right?
Right.
I mean, again, he can be kind of bad. The other thing, nice thing about punts, and you know, another difficult thing to parse for DFS sometimes is your punt can be bad. Like if he goes out there and only scores like 6.5 fantasy points, you're pretty disappointed on a points per dollar basis. But at only 4,700, kills you way less than a speculative big money play.
Right.
Like if Brown only gets, you know, 14 points on 9,000 salary, well, you're way, way further back than you were if you played Washington. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a tough one to watch. I'm not sure where we'll wind up. I expect a lot of long conversations this Sunday morning while I'm walking my dog.
The over-under has dropped about 5% since open, from 52.5 to 50. So the points have dropped a little bit off the board. I'm not exactly sure why. They might have just come in too bullish on both of these teams to start. We talked about Melvin Gordon yesterday on the Chargers side of the ball, so I don't think we need to go totally down that road again. We talked about Rivers as well, and we consider both of them to be pretty good plays this week against Oakland. And we also, honestly, talked a decent amount about just the Chargers receiving game and how they've spread the ball around to a lot of different guys this year. So if you want the thoughts on that one, head back to the last podcast, because the Chargers definitely are interesting.
My enthusiasm has gone down a little bit as that line has drifted down about Rivers and all that combo. I still think he's an interesting big tourney play, but yeah, probably not the direction you want to go. At an implied total around 23, you know, all my criticisms of Roethlisberger probably go double for Rivers in that regard. So, I'm drifting away from him even for my big tournaments.
And the next game that seems like one of the games that NFL just likes to jam into their Thursday night lineup is the Bills at the Rams. That's what I mean. It's just kind of like, I mean, who cares? Actually, there are a couple of interesting guys here, but the Bills at the Rams, the game starts at 40. People think that is way too high. It gets down to 39.5, which is about as low as you'll see an NFL game in terms of an over-under. I have one guy on the Bills side of the ball that I think is interesting, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts if you like anyone here. One.
Yeah, the one guy we talked about earlier this week was Robert Woods. You know, he has been getting a ton of targets, you know, not only a healthy target share, but he's been doing stuff with it. And mostly the thing we like about him is that he's super, super cheap. So with Sammy Watkins continuing to struggle with injury stuff, I think Robert Woods is at least a decent consideration, probably a reasonably high floor given what he's done in the last couple of weeks against Arizona and New England. But, you know, not a guy I'm like thrilled to jam in every format or anything like that.
No. This game's pretty unexciting. I do like Woods, especially on DraftKings, where for the PPR, if he's going to get in sort of bump up to that double-digit target range, which he's pretty close on. But other than that, it's hard to get really totally excited. Kenny Britt might not play in this game. Only interesting because he was seeing some targets on the LA side of the ball, not a ton. Again, these two teams are just, I mean, so bad.
The Rams are a complete wasteland. Even Gurley, you know, he's maintained a pretty elite opportunity and just done nothing with it.
Right. And
24 touches again last game for 82 yards. Like, geez.
They just have nothing on the offside of this team. The quarterback's terrible. The wide receivers are terrible. They play slow as hell. So it's just one of those things. Like, Buffalo plays slow. It's mostly just to stay away, though. We do like Woods. The next game is the Giants heading into Green Bay. Giants are pretty big underdogs headed in here. Green Bay -7. With the second highest implied total, second or third highest implied total on the week at 27.5, over under of 48. We spent a lot of time yesterday talking about Odell Beckham and some of the things that are going on around him. So if you want the probably way too long of a talk about Odell Beckham, head over to the last podcast. We also talked about Aaron Rodgers as a possible consideration, though we raised some red flags about his last couple of seasons worth of performance, especially when it comes to the accuracy. What do you see? I mean, on the Green Bay side, when you see teams like this that are heavy favorites, can you talk yourself into either Rodgers or maybe even a guy like Eddie Lacy running the ball?
Yeah, I think, well, Rodgers is a guy we've talked about quite a lot. But the combination of the decreased completion percentage and the problems with just not even accumulating many yards this season has me feeling pretty concerned. But this is an area where, like whenever you're going to dramatically disagree with how Las Vegas sees a game going, you have to feel pretty confident. And I don't know that I feel that confident. Like, as I look at it, I'm seeing a lot of troubling trends. They don't see them, or maybe it's just that they're setting a line based on the public perception of Rodgers and the Packers and Nelson being back and so on. So, you know, it's one of those times where I really want to be courageous and make a bold stand there. It's hard to do that in light that no one seems to agree with me. Thankfully for this week, I don't think you really need to. You know, the nice thing about DFS, again, you can just pick. You don't have to pick a guy from any team. And I don't think you're missing out on a ton by not playing Rodgers this week. So, I'm definitely lower on him than most, though, I would say.
Yeah, I think he comes into play mostly just on that 4 o'clock slate, that 4 o'clock on. Again, this is the 8:30 game, so it's not like he's going to fall into a lot of considerations. You get the 1 p.m. only, the 4 p.m. only, really only the main slate you're considering. I guess they have that 4 p.m. plus 8:30. Like we said, I like Beckham a lot this week.
Yeah, I like Beckham too.
And there's, even though some of this just this dumb news that's come out about him, which is sort of, I don't mind Jordy Nelson either if they think that he's going to see sort of a decent target share. Though on that 4 o'clock and on slate, there are a couple guys that I would probably play over him, like Emmanuel Sanders. Even Julio Jones is very expensive. Mike Evans. These guys are just the targets are just there for those guys more than maybe Nelson. So I'm not sure I would go there even on the smaller slate on Nelson. The Giants run game, we're just totally off this, correct?
Yep. Okay. I don't see any reason to play any of those guys. On Beckham, I would be pretty surprised if they benched him mid-game or anything.
They're not going to bench him mid-game. He would need to throw the tantrum of all tantrums, I think. And I just don't think he's going to, frankly. But he would just – and the writing's on the wall now that I think it's kind of like toe the company line or whatever. And by the way, the guy's like frustrated. I get it. The team hasn't been very good. You're just like allowed to be frustrated. I don't know. The whole situation – whenever these like dumb news things come out about – guys saying they're not having fun or people going crazy about like he's going to get suspended. When these things aren't handled internally, it's just very surprising to me. But I mean, it's partly on Beckham for just kind of coming out and saying the thing to start, although it seems like he was just at least being honest. The final game is the Monday night game. I'm not sure we can totally go crazy here. For one, it's not on the main slate of games because they, you know, both sites don't include this game. The other piece of it is we're not totally sure if Cam's going to play. He's been in concussion protocol this whole week. I don't believe he's practiced up until now. There's no line on the game, which suggests that, you know, they just, in situations like this, yeah, Vegas just takes it off the board. Rightfully so. There's too much uncertainty. I don't even know how we can talk about the Carolina side not knowing if Cam's going to play.
We can't.
Right. And then on the Tampa Bay side, I would assume if Cam did play, they'd be something like -4.5 or something like that, going in with not that high of a total.
Cousin Doug,
it could be way off on that, by the way. I'm not really good at stuff like that. But, you know, Mike Evans is still a guy who's seeing a lot of targets in Tampa Bay. He's had an enormously difficult time converting them. Even in a situation like that, like where do you see Evans just in terms of how many targets he's seeing this year? I think he might lead the NFL in targets.
Yes. Evans is an elite target guy, and this is clearly a better matchup than it was last season, given that Carolina lost both of their, you know, future cornerbacks. So, sure, Evans is a fine play. I think you can actually consider him in any format, and I think he'll be one of your better options in big tournaments, especially because I think, you know, he's kind of lacked. I mean, he had that one really big game, but it wasn't even that big, 10 receptions for 132 and a touch against LA. But I think he's the type of guy who can put up the biggest total at the position for a week, and getting that for less than 8,000 on FanDuel is a tremendous bargain for big tournaments. So he's going to be a guy I'm going to be heavily building around for my big tourneys this week.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, especially if you're playing that like late Sunday in the Monday slate, that's a guy that you probably want to have in cash games just because the floor is so high with the targets. All right, that is it for us today. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site, grab a free trial to our projection system, which is powered by Lineup Lab, helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, while the playoffs are still happening, and NBA coming right down the pike in less than a couple weeks away, so very excited about that. Everything you need to get started or continue winning on FanDuel and DraftKings. Buddy, enjoy your weekend, and we will talk again next Tuesday when we break down all the money that we won.
Let's do it.